Welcome to The Culture's Money. The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
Welcome back, culture members. This is episode 5 of The Culture's Money. I am your host, Jamal Vito. Some of you may know me on other social media platforms as Leo Grand Prince, but however you know me, I hope you know me to be an advocate of financial literacy, personal finance, and building the financial health of the Black community. I'm excited, one, because this is the 7th episode, and I'm really big into numbers. 7 is one of my favorite numbers, but I have another entrepreneur and dynamic woman on the podcast today. Fellas, they beating y'all out. Like, I've had a few scheduled for y'all, but y'all keep canceling and the ladies showing out. So I prefer them over y'all at this point. But without further ado, I would like to introduce y'all to my today's guest, Miss Bridget.
Hi, everybody.
So Bridget, tell them a little bit about yourself and the businesses and adventures that you run.
My name is Bridget Loren. I am a beauty guru, hairstylist, entrepreneur. I have my own extension company, product line, and other small beauty product lines. So that's just about me. I work hard every day and I like money.
I hear that. So about the I don't know too much about the extension things. Now, for the products, are those like products that you designed from, you know, inception to to market, where you work with a chemist and everything to kind of design the exact type of, I don't know the right word, chemical makeup of your products?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Right now, I'm still in like the very, very beginning stages. Like, you know, I'm learning
as I go along.
Yeah, so I'm learning as I go along. Right now, I do have one product that I've developed on my own, and that is my edge control. I love that very much. I retail are through a product company that I use in my salon. I like them a whole lot, so I retail their products for right now. And then maybe, hopefully, by Christmas in the wintertime, I'll be launching my own product line, which I am, yes, going through a chemist. I'm also looking into some private label companies. If you don't know what a private label company is, that's basically a product that's already developed, already being sold, and many other big brands use the same formula. So you can, you know, kind of start there. So I'm trying to work my way and see where it is, what's going to be most cost effective, and, you know, not break the bank, but, you know, make the bank in developing my own products. So that will include like shampoo, conditioner, some specialty products, finishing products, and things like that.
I love so much about what you just said right there. For one, you know, you're saying not breaking the bank. So I'm assuming that you're bootstrapping this, right?
Yeah.
Right. So that's always great. So let's go into a little bit about that, because I think, you know, bootstrapping gets, you know, romanticized sometimes in like Silicon Valley and other things. But tell people how, you know, what's the dynamic when you're bootstrapping? Like, what are like some of the hard decisions you have to make?
Well, the decisions before used to be my bills on my business. Those were the biggest decisions.
Oh, that's a bar. That's a bar right there.
So it would be that. But a lot of day-to-day things, like sometimes it comes between like, all right, do I want to, you know, invest in my personal life, go out here and be social, hang out with all my friends. And, you know, that can become very expensive. The dinner parties, birthday gifts, extravaganzas. Or do I want to, you know, settle in, lock in, sacrifice maybe my wardrobe and my personal life to lock in and see what it is that I want. I feel like the pandemic has definitely helped with that, because I've had time to like sit in the house and really think about what it is that I want and what I'm willing to sacrifice. Like right now, I'm without a vehicle. I got into a car accident a few months ago. And instead of going right back out and hopping into a new car, I'm like, you know what, let me take this couple of months to not have a car payment, not have car insurance, and take that money and put it somewhere else and see where it gets me. So that's kind of like what I do. I do like a kind of rap Peter to pay Paul kind of situation, and I gamble it. So I'll put it in, you know, I put my money into this edge control, and I didn't buy anything else until at least I made my money back from the edge control, or until I saw a profit. So that's what I do with pretty much everything. I do that with hair and anything I add to my brand. I start off small and I just see where it takes me, and then I develop into something bigger.
Jeez, like you like swinging for my soul real quick. I didn't think it would get that deep that fast, but I like
Oh, I'm a very deep individual. Like, I don't say much, but when I do start talking, it comes out.
and that's so profound. I like your thinking about the sacrifice. And I think, again, sometimes not to belittle anyone or anything like that, but I always can tell the difference between a business owner and an entrepreneur. Yeah. Entrepreneur is like, they know the sacrifice. They're willing to, you know, like you said, you gave up a car, and I can relate to that. Like, I had a car before my current car that got totaled, and I could have went out and got a new car and all that, but I was like, no, I'll take the gear and do other things and get myself in a better position that I wanted to do, that the money for that car payment was taken away. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if people know that I'm either catching Ubers or catching a bus, because I'm not about the appearance. So I always think that's always good about, you know, business, the difference between business owners and entrepreneurs, because business owners, they want the money and all that to look good. Entrepreneurs, they want the money for stability. Mm-hmm. They want it long-term way.
That's why I tell people, entrepreneurship is a lifestyle. Business is like a business owner. It's like this is a lifestyle. What's the opposite of a lifestyle? It's just a habit. That's what
it's a hobby.
Yeah, a hobby.
It's a hobby. Mm-hmm. It's not a passion. I read this quote that says, struggles will reveal if something is something that you're passionate about or something that you just like to do.
Exactly.
Because if you're passionate about it, you know, we're problem solvers. We'll figure out a way. I'm sure in the midst of you, you know, working budgets and doing entrepreneurial things, you're finding workarounds where someone says no. You're mm-hmm. like, okay, you're saying no, but I'll find the other way. Business owners would be like, okay, I just can't do that. Like, that's just not what's going to happen. So what inspired you to start dibbling in, like, starting your own brand? Were you finding that the chemicals that you were using on your client's hair wasn't reflective of how you thought their hair should be growing or flourishing? Or, you know, take me through that process.
Well, honestly, the initial products were just what people were asking me for. Like, my clients are always asking me, or what edge control do you recommend? Or what products do you recommend? Or what lashes do you wear? Like, my clients are always asking me stuff. So when it came to doing the shampoo line, mind you, we're in the middle of a pandemic. They shut down all the beauty salons, hair stores are closed. My clients are spoiled. They don't shampoo their hair themselves. Like, they don't do that. They like, for what? Like, why would I shampoo my hair myself when I have a wonderful, amazing stylist who won't do it for me? So that was the main question I kept getting, which was, what products do I use on my hair? Where can I buy products? Where can I get products? So mind you, I'm starting these other small little product lines, little beauty products. And I'm like, you know, on my website, that would be something so clutch to have if I just had my own products on my website. So the next time anything like this happens and my clients don't have shampoos and they still want, you know, the same salon grade quality, they still want the same things I do for their hair, I can just have my own products. So I just, you know, got on Google, got the Google in the realm, tap danced through some, you know, emails and, hey, what you got? Let me see it. Order some samples and, you know, just roll from there. The next stage of the process I'm in is like working on the logo and what I want everything to look like. So it's a pretty long process.
That's so dope that you took the initiative to do the research and all that. It makes me think that I actually, just randomly, this is why I love social media, and I feel like real entrepreneurs use it for what it's for, mm-hmm. the networking thing. I found this Black chemist, like, and she's really dope. She's kind of doing what you were saying. She has her own products, but I kind of randomly just exploring some things. Like, do you just make your own things, or do you take on clients who might want to, you know, make their own chemical things for their own products? And she said, yeah. And I was, and making, and listening to your story, I always say, like, I like to be a connector of people. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes people negate the whole networking thing, mm-hmm. where it's like, yeah, you know, you could do it yourself and all that, but networking is always good. And I just say that all to say, it's like, we're all a bit networking of Black entrepreneurs and everything like that. And I think it's dope that you took the initiative to research and found your own path to find out how you could bring this to fruition. Now, while you're doing this, are you kind of getting a crash course in chemistry as well?
Yeah, like with any product I use for my clients, because, you know, people have allergies and certain things people can't use, mm-hmm. people have certain scalp conditions. So I'm always kind of aware of what products I'm using. That's why I love the brand I use now, which is Influence. It's a Black-owned product line, and they have seminars and symposiums, and they give you so much information about their products. So that's the main thing I look for, is if I can't find any information about your product, I'm not really going to want to use it, because then I can't learn your product. If you don't offer classes about your product, product, you don't have any videos, any reviews or testimonials, then how reliable of a product are you? You know what I mean? So anything that I use, I always look into it. I read the ingredients. I look up, you know, I try it on myself. If I don't like it, I don't use it on my clients. My clients sometimes bring their own stuff and I decline. Like, you know, you can go find you a stylist who's going to use those products, but I don't prefer those products. I like what my products do. So, I mean, it becomes difficult to get this product line under control. I mean, one of my girlfriends, she's a really, really good friend of mine. Love her to death. Mind you, I've never had a complaint about anything I've used on my client's hair. And then here she come, one out of maybe 200 clients, 200-300 clients. Oh, I don't like these products. I don't like what they do for my hair. So now I'm like, well, wait, I've been doing hair this long and I've been using these products for this long. So I took that as a sign like, well, maybe it's time to change the formula. Like maybe it's time to try something new, because if it's not working on her hair, how many of my other clients are not really liking the results? You know what I mean? So like I'm always on top of my products and on top of what it is that I use, just because I want the best of everything. And I need my clients to have the best. Otherwise, they're not going to come to me.
You're segueing into something great that I want to talk mm-hmm. about. And the reason that I reached out to you initially was because I see a lot. I don't know if you're on Twitter, but I see all the time Black owned businesses getting crushed for customer service. Mm-hmm. And you brought up the point that your friend, one of your good friends, actually brought it up to you, and you thought it not robbery to take her criticism and not get defensive. Mm-hmm. And I want to know what stems that, because a lot of times when I'm on Twitter, I'm going to tell you the two Black businesses that get hounded the worst is the Black-owned boutiques, online mm-hmm. boutiques, and the stylists. Mm-hmm. And when I say they getting creamed, like these clients are coming with screenshots and receipts, and it makes it look bad because you can see where the client simply, you know, brought up an issue and it was either dismissed, ignored, they're not responding, don't respond to emails. So how do you stay on top of that? Because it sounds like you stay on top of it, and customer service is a big part of your entire
yeah,
brand.
I mean, I'm not a perfect stylist. I don't claim to be by a long shot. And any experience I experience is a learning experience. I haven't had perfect clients. I've messed up. And I think in those times where I've messed up, I've treated my clients how I've wanted to be treated. You know, if I were a client and I came to service happened to me, how would I want to be handled? And that's kind of how I do it. I think a lot of stylists forget that we are in the service industry. Like, if you're a hairstylist for yourself, then you might as well go be like a YouTube hairstylist and just make videos doing your, they make plenty of money doing that. Don't service people if you don't have any type of affection or sympathy for what they're going through. Hair is the biggest thing for women. And as a woman, I know I don't play about my hair, so I'm not going to play about anybody else's hair. I've seen some of those same messages you're saying. Like, I've seen one message where the girl asked her, do I have to come shampoo? She said, yeah. She said, the client said, okay, well, you know, I can shampoo myself, but can you blow dry it? The girl gonna tell her, no, it's extra. If I blow dry it, you might as well just blow dry it yourself. And I'm just like, you are the stylist though. Like, suppose she has like a 4C hair, it's down her back, and she just doesn't know what to do with it, and you're her stylist. How can you tell her to handle her hair herself? That's not fair.
I can hear the passion in your voice, and that's so drastic differently than like some of the, like I said, customer service. And I'm a consultant, so I've seen it so much to the point, I like, every time I see a complaint, I'll retweet the customer's complaint. Like, yo, I'll be telling y'all, just book me for a business consultant.
We can get the customer service together. Yeah, like so many of my clients come in complaining. And I had a client yesterday, and she's been going to her stylist. They've been friends for over 20 years. She said but she's not happy. And she was like, every time I tell her I'm not happy with my hair, she blames it on me. And I'm like, mm.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, that's not the way to do it. Like me, I'm a problem solver. If you come at me with a problem, I don't take none of this personal. It's business. Like, this business is how I take care of my personal needs. But on the front end, it's always going to always be business. I'm going to have my business suit on, and I'm going to handle it that way. So like you said, when my girlfriend said she didn't like my products, no, I didn't take it personal. I took it as like, okay, well, let me go see what's wrong with my products, or let me see what it is that her hair needs that these products aren't doing. Like, it's just about taking initiative.
So let me ask you a question. I'm a financial analyst by training, so everything's about numbers for me. Do you? And I know that the Black hair care industry, last time I checked, maybe a year ago, it was a $2.5 billion industry. So let's call it that. Do you think that some of the girls get into it, one, because it's a high cash flow business, and once they start making that consistent client base and all that, they take it for granted and just assume that, you know, the money's going to keep coming in. So they'll sacrifice the service because, oh, I'm paid, baby. I'm a boss, blah, blah, blah.
This business is 80% personality, 20% talent. And a lot of girls are getting away with the personality aspect of it, but they're losing in the customer service and the actual talent part of it, the passion part of it. So those girls who get caught up in that fast money, basically they're getting paid for their personality because the clients don't even like you. Like, really, they don't really like you. They want you to do their hair, but you just have this presence online and you're so big and everyone's coming to you and you're so popular that, you know, people forget, like, your service thing. We are in a service industry. It's not about ego. It's not about, some of the best hairstylists I know walk around looking a mess. Okay. If this was a Zoom call, I would be embarrassed. Okay. We walk around looking a mess.
Oh my God.
We service other people. We're in need of service. If this was an ego competition, or, you know what I mean, if this was about me, some of these stylists, they look dolled up way better than their clients. Their hair is done way better than their clients. And like my client yesterday, again, no hair care. Your client is complaining about my hair is not doing something. My hair is not XYZ. And you flip it on your client. I'm like, she's not even talking about you. She didn't say you did anything wrong. She's just saying she's not liking her hair. Like,
okay. Well, I'm sure you've heard about, you know, the George Floyd and, you know, another black man dying unnecessarily at the hands of the government. And I don't, you know, necessarily want to get into the political aspect of it, but I'm also always thinking about the solutions. And people are marching and everything like that. And my contribution always is to it. Okay, y'all march to the social and the legislative change. My contribution is I want to position the culture for economic empowerment. I always feel like if we are not dependent on the government's handouts and their financial supporting of us, it'll give us a better position of negotiation. Keeping on what you were talking about, you know, that dynamic between clients and business owners and entrepreneurs, how essential do you think it is? Because I was saying something yesterday, I would not be surprised if the culture, in a way, kind of starts segregating again. And by that, I mean keeping the black dollar within the black community.
I'm all for it.
People are going to start inconveniencing themselves just to make sure that the dollar circulates in our community more, because we're tired of asking the government to give us, to live up to the creed that they put on paper, that, you know, this country and this government is about equality for all people. So how essential is it for the clients and the entrepreneurs, black both, to be on the same page? Because so quickly, a bad experience has happened with a bad, you know, a black business or a black entrepreneur, and clients will never go there. But we are seeing evidence right now of corporations being openly or passively aggressively racist, but y'all still in Walmart, still in Target. Why don't you give the black, you know, we have to come to an understanding that the black businesses have to be given that same length of forgiveness.
And that, I think that is our main problem. We aren't as forgiving with ourselves as we are with everyone else. Like, even with this whole systematic racism, we've forgiven our oppressors for so many years, forgiven and forgiven and forgetting them. And so now that we're finally fed up, now you want to slap it in our faces what we don't have. I think it's very important for the black community to stay in the black community. I'm not for segregation. I'm not for this is for black people, this is for white people. But I do believe we should have an alternative Wall Street. There should be a black Wall Street. There should be other resources for black businesses. There should be other communities and groups and support. Like, yes, I believe all of that. It's sad that, like, we have to wait till now to come to terms with that and to, like, kind of see where we need to put our money. But definitely, we need our own community of bankers. We need our own community of people who want to lend us stuff, our own mortgage companies. We don't need another. I'm not knocking any rapper celebrity, but we don't need another one. We need more doctors, more lawyers, so that we can take care of each other. Like, I think throughout the pandemic, my clients have been so supportive. I didn't work for 2 months and they sent me money that they didn't even have to. I think if we carry the same energy that we're carrying now, all this disunity and support, and of course, everybody's not going to be on the same page, but for as long as the majority is together, I think we can all overcome this, and we will keep the money in our neighborhoods. We will keep, you know, the money in our communities and in our families.
I think you said something, you know, that's key there. I think sometimes the message gets lost, you know, in the trees for the forest, because people always, they want us to say the exact same thing or think the exact same way. And I feel like sometimes, or a lot of times, we're all for the same end result and cause. I just have a different approach than you. Like, I always tell people that, you know, Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey, and MLK, though they had, you know, divergingly different approaches, they all were about the culture. Doesn't mean no one of their approaches were wrong. Sure, they had flaws and they should have, you know, tackled a little bit more this and that. But the end goal was the same. And I think sometimes we get lost in that. It's like, oh, we all got to walk step in step and we all got to be out on the streets. We all got to do that. And sometimes that's not all that. I told people all the time, it's like, y'all protest on the street. I'm working on the financial
structure. Right, y'all protest in the street, right? And I'm going to make sure everybody I talk to still know what's going on in there with it.
Right, like, and that's the adage with it. And I think you said it earlier, we have to start being more solution-oriented. Yes. It's very easy to be complainers. Complainers, like, it stops right there. And I think sometimes that's where people think, oh, I want to go out and complain. Cool. But what's the initiative after this? What's the plans? What's the, you know, the solutions that are going to bring this together? And it has to come about what you were talking about, the sacrifice. Like, how willing are we to sacrifice the convenience? Like, do you ever think that people in the short term, because, you know, the Walmarts and Targets are so close and they can drive, are they willing to drive the extra 20 miles to a Black-owned smaller market just to make sure that the community is inclusive and well-financed?
Like me, I don't have a car. Target is right down the road from my house. But if I know Michael, whoever, got a Black-owned Target around the corner, if I got to wait an extra week to get there, maybe save a little extra coin for a car ride, I think that should be something that's done. Like, I think that's the problem in our culture, is we live in a finger-pointing culture where we point the finger at everybody instead of just pointing the finger at ourselves and saying, well, what can I do? Like, you know what I mean? Let me stop worrying about what it is that everybody else, let me stop worrying about what everybody else has got on their plate, and let me focus on my plate and my contribution to this, because that's all. It only starts with one. Like, you don't have to agree with me. You don't got to see the same colors as me. You can say it's blue, I can say it's purple, but as long as at the end of the day, we both fall into the same direction, that should be that all that matters. Like, it should be for the better of our culture. If you're tired of people talking about us in a negative way, or if you're tired of them depicting us in a negative way, like me, I'm a girl I'm very shapely, I'm voluptuous. People have told me I look like, you know, a centerfold girl or a stripper. I don't like that perception or that persona of me. So I stray away from it, and I make a mental note and a conscious note to be like, you know what? I'm not going to do these things to subject me to that type of perception of people to look at me. I think that's something all across the board with every human being, even the racist or whatever. It's like, look at yourself and see what you're contributing to the world. How does the color of my skin better the world? Like, we about to have a tree shortage in a few years, and you worried about the color of people's skin. Like, it's other things to worry about.
Now, in the community, like, is it, because I'm all big about collaboration and all that, and oftentimes I see Black businesses and entrepreneurs in the same field. Instead of partnering and collaborating, it's always the narrative that there's always competition. Do you think that's is that a poverty and scarcity mindset? If Bridget's getting the money from these clients, I got to compete with her because it's not enough money to go around. There's no way she can get money and I can get money and Chanel over here can get money. Like, do you see that in your industry and other business ventures?
Yeah, it's a lot of that. It's a lot of unfocused people in this industry, because if you're focused and you have goals and you have things that you like and want to accomplish, there will be no room for you to even worry about how much money Bridget is getting, because Bridget is definitely not worried about the money that you're spending, because it doesn't contribute to anything that I have going on. So when we collaborate and we work together, that's when I'll incorporate anything that's going on with anybody else, because at this point now you're adding to my plate. You can't be a person who wants your plate all to yourself and then still be looking at everybody else's plate trying to take what you can. That's not fair. So instead of, I never
thought of it like that. I never thought of it like that. Keeping your plate while stealing off.
Like, you want to keep your plate at your table, but you want to get up and still pick from the buffet. That's not right. Like, no, bring your plate with you. Let me see what's on yours. We can share and exchange. That's a large part of the problem. People want to be secretive. They don't like sharing information. That's that thing that goes into networking, like you said. No one wants to tap into that network. And for the last 2 years, my New Year's resolution has been to tap into my network. I know people. I don't want to describe. I know people. And they're some pretty important, pretty good people who can invest in my business. Or if they can't invest in my business, they can invest in my mind. They can invest into my attitude. They can invest into my mindset. Like, you know what I mean? They can invest their energy into me. Like when I go around people, I invest my energy. If I have nothing else to offer you, I'm going to offer you some positive energy, and I'm going to make sure that you're enlightened while I'm around. That's all I got for you.
That is so key what you just said. I always tell people, I tell this on Twitter a lot. I think people, a lot of times people don't take the initiative with certain ventures because, you know, they don't have the capital. You know, it's hard for Black businesses to get, you know, venture funding and all that, blah, blah, blah. And I always tell people, it's like, if it's okay to be the brokest person in the deal, but add some other capacity. If you're the brokest person in the deal, be the most intellectual and knowledgeable person in the deal. Know that industry. Like, if you're not, say the partner's putting up $10 million, it's five of y'all and everybody else is financing, but you have not a dime to put in. Some people will literally, and I see this a lot in the business industry, they will pay. They're okay with someone being what we like to say, the operational person. I just want to put my money in, get my return on my investment. I don't want to deal with contractors. I don't want to deal with complaints. I don't want to deal with tenants. I don't want to deal with contracts. I just want to get legalities. None of this. Exactly. And I think that keeps people from collaborating. And I think that in the Black community, on both sides, like, we don't partner up because we're afraid that if we partner up with other Black people and we ain't got our money, they're going to try to make fun of us, say we broke, say we, someone say, oh, we fund all of this. You work for me, technically. And I think we have to get away from that narrative of shaming each other for not having. We're not all going to have the same skill set.
Going back into being focused. If you're focused on yourself and you're solid enough, it doesn't matter what you lack, because what you have will overpower it and you can stand in any room. That's what's important.
So how long before you say Christmas? Is that a hard deadline?
It's just the furthest one out so that I have time. Yeah.
You have time.
But, 2020 is throwing us a lot of curveballs, a lot of wrenches. So that's another reason I haven't even gone to get a car yet, because we don't know what's going on. And I'm not trying to, I've gotten out of the red, I'm finally in the green, and I'm trying to stay there.
tell your most challenging entrepreneurial story. Tell me the lesson you learned.
So it's honestly my favorite story to tell now. So earlier on in my career, like I said, I had my own hair company. This is my second hair company, by the way. So the first hair company did really, really good, took off. I made six figures in my first year and a half. It was booming. The website was just jumping. Everything was great. I had a launch party. Just go everything A-okay. I'm celebrating. So a few months later, this is the weekend from hell. I'm sick. Like I rarely get sick. I rarely catch a cold, anything. I'm sick. I don't feel good. I let my best friend hold my car. At the time, I was working I had my own salon with a partner, and I was working in D.C. I was back and forth, and I was traveling doing hair. So I was a very, very busy 22-year-old, I guess. And so this one weekend, I had moved out of the salon because I split ways with my partner. I was gone so much that I just wasn't able to be the partner she needed. So I packed all my stuff and had it in my car. My hair shipment, just ordered a hair shipment, all these products in my car. I get sick. I let my best friend hold my car. She goes off, does whatever it is she does. So she comes back and I'm sick in the house. She comes in. She goes back out the next morning to my car. She like, hey, did you come to your car? Like, all your stuff is all over the place. I'm like, no, I didn't go to the car. I'm sick. Like, why would I go to the car? I'm sick. So I was like, you know what? Just check my trunk for me. Like, just check my trunk. So she checks the trunk. All of my products are gone. My hair is gone. Everything in my car is just gone. She said that she came home. I must have been asleep. She came to my house. And she went back out to go get like her book bag or whatever. And she must have left the door open. So the neighborhood I was living in, they broke into all of the cars in the neighborhood on like six different apartment complexes. It took the police like 4 hours to come to my car. My whole shipment, $10,000 worth of hair, probably another 10 in product or whatever it was in my trunk, just all gone. And it just like, I just felt like I lost my job. Like that was my second job, my second and my third job, because I lost my hair shipment, which was my investment to, you know, flip that and get my money back. So now, boom, I don't have no hair to sell. I don't have no products. I can't even do hair at this point. And because I'm not doing hair and I don't have hair to sell, I don't have gas money to drive back and forth to both locations to do my job. Now I don't have money to catch these flights, to book these clients. So that was like the biggest financial downfall. And it was so hard to recover from because I was just so discouraged. I even though I never blamed my best friend, or I never like directly told her like, oh, it's your fault. But subconsciously I blamed her because that was like the thread that just unraveled every good thing that I had going on. So fast forward a few years, I went through a whole like depression about it. I was sad about it. I beat myself up about it. I started selling hair. Then I stopped selling hair. Then I started selling hair again. I stopped doing hair for like a year and a half. I went to school. All to just end up back here doing hair again. And now I have my hair company is thriving again. I have other products. My website's back up. And, you know, it took a lot to get here. A lot of crying, a lot of tears, a lot of money. But I honestly think that if that situation never happened to me, I wouldn't even appreciate anything that I have right now, because now I know what it's like to lose it.
Oh, wow.
And then I built it all back again. Here we
are. That reminds me that there's some people, there's a quote that I see floating around somewhere. And I feel like people say it just because it's trendy, but some of us actually know it, that if you took everything away from me, like the money, the products and all that, and set me down anywhere in the world, I could rebuild it all over again. Your story reminds me of that, because you came full circle. And I think that's so essential, you know, that preservation, that perseverance. And mm-hmm. it's the core of our people, for real. We've overcome so much, and how, you know, it's only fitting in business that we should always overcome, you know, shortfalls and setbacks. And that's why I understand why, you know, so many people be so fearful, because like we've been through so much work.
And that's what people are like,
what are you afraid of?
What's Trump asking us now? What do we have to lose? What's the worst that can happen? Like those type of questions is like, the worst has already happened. Like I've already experienced that when people ask me that, like, or when I ask myself, I've already lost everything. So take it again. I mean, I'm just going to find something different. Like I've started a hobby where now I'm a plant mom. And plants are just so inspirational because they thrive no matter what the conditions is. You give them improper sunlight, they're still going to grow. Don't water them as much, they're still going to grow. Then you start taking care of them, they're going to thrive. Like, I feel like I live the same way. It doesn't matter up, down, left, right. I'm going to stay focused and I'm going to get what it is that I want or need to level myself out. Like, some people just give up in the beginning stages.
That's... I don't even have nothing else to add to that. Like, you feeding them so much on this episode, I ain't got nothing else. Well, I think you've given them so much of a tidbit. I feel like we definitely gonna have you on again, because that mindset is so essential. And we're gonna have you on once you launch this personal label product. I definitely want to see the outcome and brand that. But I want you to give them like your emails, your website, all your brands, everything you have, so they can check you out. We definitely about promoting Black businesses and y'all success. All right,
so again, my name is Bridget Loren. You can find me at Instagram at Bridget Loren. That's Bridget with two T's and an E on the end. Loren, L-O-R-E-N. The salon page is Studio 4 Salon. That's underscore studio, the number 4 salon underscore. You can shop the studio for everything .com. Sorry, I was stuttering. The studio for everything.com. You'll find the hair products, edge control, lashes, and things like that there. What else do I have coming up? Oh, you can find me on YouTube at Bridget Loren. I do hair tutorials, a lot of fashion and makeup stuff on there. Like I said, I am a beauty guru and beauty is my life. So everything that makes you feel glam is my enjoyment. And that's what I want every girl in the world, to just feel her glamorous self.
Get into that spirit, y'all. We definitely thank Bridget for coming on, sharing her stories. Feeding the culture, you know, motivation, inspiration, and education. This has been another great episode of The Culture's Money. I look forward to bringing you guys another episode very soon. Please check out all of Bridget's handles, all of her products, support her, invest in the culture as well as investing in yourself. And I'll talk to you guys soon.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitose, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money, baby.